The House Armed Services Committee is finished now putting its touches on the fiscal 2015 Defense Authorization Act. Stars and Stripes reports the committee is including full troop pay raises and benefits, but the Defense Department believes some cuts are necessary to preserve readiness. The defense industry is figuring out what these changes will mean for them, too. Pat Tamburino is former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civilian Personnel Policy, former Chief of Staff for the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, and now Director of Business Development at LMI Government Consulting, and my guest on Industry Chatter today. Pat, it's great to talk to you on this side of the fence. You've been on the program a number of times in your DOD capacity. It's great to see you. Welcome back. Well,
thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. This transition is fascinating, and it is something that a number of people are going through. Mm-hmm. We talked before that, before we went on the air, that combined with your uniformed and civilian service, 38 years mm-hmm. of public service, you weren't finished, obviously. What's the thought process like for somebody in your shoes who says, I've been doing this for a long time, I think there might be something else out there?
So I think, Francis, it was time, because I felt I had done everything I could do as a career civil servant, and I thought I had done it pretty well and been pretty effective. The pace is kind of brutal in the Pentagon, and I'm not getting any younger, so it was a family decision to make the transition, but you're absolutely correct. I wasn't done. So I had two very important things in my mind when I transitioned. I wanted to continue with the concept of good government and contributing to good government. When you do it for 38 years, and that's what you spend your whole working life doing, you get very committed to that. So I wanted to find a firm that shared those ideas, and LMI Government Consulting certainly shared that idea of contributing to good government, because one thing's going to remain constant as the Department of Defense moves forward, as the whole federal space moves forward for federal managers. The demand for government services is not going to diminish. The problems are not going to get any easier. And as a longtime federal executive, you have less and less time during the day to really ponder the difficult problems, because you are consumed with today's issues. And I think there is a lot of room in the federal space for people that want to help federal managers solve those problems, because the citizenry deserves answers, and they want a good solution. And I wanted to go for work for a company or do something where I thought I can stay in this space. They will be happy to see me show up every morning, which I'm pleased to say I get that feeling every day when I walk through the door at LMI, and they'll be happy to have me. And I certainly feel very welcome there. So I'm getting the best of everything right now.
You've touched on something there that is something I hear much more often right in the last 2 or 3 years than I heard in the mm-hmm. decade or so before that I covered the government. Mm-hmm. And that is, we're drinking from a fire hose every day. We have no opportunity anymore to sit back and really consider the big problems that we're going to be dealing with 6 months and a year and 5 years from now.
It's very hard. I mean, we all have studied all the management books, try getting to quadrant one and quadrant two and all of that good ideas. But I remember when I was the chief of staff and the undersecretary of defense personnel and readiness, I would literally look in the newspaper when I got up in the morning, and with good batting average, I could predict what my day was going to be consumed with, because the issue for personnel and readiness, it's all about people. So we would look on the front page of the paper and say, today we're going to deal with something that affects the millions of men and women that serve the country in uniform, or the million civil servants, or something like that. And when you're consumed by that, trying to build a strategic plan and get in front, and everybody wants to do it, there's precious little time to do it. And there's no let up that I could detect.
Mm-hmm. So knowing a lot of federal employees mm-hmm. The way that I do mm-hmm. who have transitioned as you have, you still get up in the morning and you still look at those headlines.
I do.
And you still think about the implications for the people that you care about that are still in there. How do you think about those issues differently now, though, than you did when you knew how they were going to impact your day that day, vis-a-vis thinking about them now more strategically?
Well, I empathize greatly for the colleagues I left behind, because I can still consider them my family. What I'm thinking about now is where does the department or any federal agency need to be 24 months to 60 months from now? I don't think I'm going to have a lot of influence on what they're going to do today or tomorrow. But if I can spend a little bit of time, because I have the time, thinking about the next big thing, thinking about the next big challenge that they'll have, and help them shape their thinking, I think that's a great service to them. And so I try to say, what have we learned? What are we worried about today? What should we be worried about? And not creating the problem, but just legitimately being introspective about what's the next thing on the horizon that's going to challenge, and you can fill in any federal agency. And let me see if I can help them think about that a little bit, which is a pretty nice thing to do, because I get to leverage all those 38 years.
Mm-hmm. So the Defense Department thinks about operationally a couple of different important things. Mm-hmm. One is obviously whatever a potential threat or kinetic actual threat is against the safety of the United States or the interests abroad. The other is the ongoing operations in preparation for whatever threat may present itself at some point in the future. And those can be two separate things are very distinct. In thinking in a 24 to 60 month time frame, how do you think about those two things? Do you think about them separately, or do you think about them connectedly? Or
I try to think about it connectedly. I mean, I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago when a gentleman spoke and said, you know, the world is still full of people that don't think kindly towards the United States, and there's always going to be a threat. Based on my last couple of years in the department, I tend to think of everything in terms of the people. So the threat will be there, and I kind of reflect of who would have thought 10 years ago we'd be so consumed by cyber and our ability to create a cyber workforce and IT professionals that do all kinds of dimensions of information technology from both a warfighting perspective and just a governance perspective. So I'm trying to think about what would I be thinking about now in terms of the workforce? You know, cyber is here to stay, so we know that's true. We know that we haven't done a lot of hiring in the federal government for a long time, at least in DOD hiring, I think is pretty low. How are they going to refresh the workforce? And what's going to be the strategy to refresh it? What skill sets am I going to want to have in the federal space? And even that, I think they have to think about that in at least two dimensions. They're going to need functional skill sets, which is probably going to come from America's colleges and universities. And they're going to need leadership skill sets, which they're going to have to grow inside the department, especially for the civilian workforce.
How much of the challenges in both each of those two are kind of HR-oriented challenges where HR professionals will undertake them?
Yeah.
And how much of those two challenges are mission-related, where DOD-specialized mission experts will be charged with helping to develop? Because it seems like it would be some of both.
Yeah, I used to give a presentation to the HR community that said HR from the back room to the boardroom was the title of the presentation. And my view is line managers are going to operate the day-to-day business, whether they're line managers who wear a military uniform or senior executives and senior civil servants. But they have to be enabled in their thinking and assisted in their thinking by HR professionals. So I'm a big advocate of a joint effort where HR is not this transactional idea. HR is, let me help you think about what kind of workforce you need. Let me help you think about what's the mix of skills, and then let me develop a strategy for you to go get them. So I'm a big advocate of this. HR sits at the table with the line leaders.
The idea of reshaping, you use the term refreshing. Mm-hmm. Others have used the term reshaping the workforce inside the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
It looks pretty daunting from the outside.
I think it's huge.
Yeah. When you have a situation, an environment that is averse to change, I think is not an unfair term to use. Is it, Pat?
I think what I found in my entire career in the Department of Defense, because I worked across agencies, but I was not employed by any other agencies. That's not an accurate statement, because what I found is Good leaders will listen to good ideas. Good leaders will take risk. And I think what is incumbent upon the senior leadership, especially on the civilian side, is to let people take some risk, because you have to try the ideas out. If you wait for the perfect solution, you're going to waste a lot of time, and perfection is vastly overrated, in my view. And I know this is a, you know, a worn-out term, but I think if the department exercises some good, prudent risk-taking, they'll be able to make the change, because they need to. And I'm a big advocate of total force management. I think it's military, career civilians, and contractors. And I think the challenge is to find the balance, because you need all three to have an effective Department of Defense. And each has unique skill sets they bring to the table.
We have so much on the table, and I have to take a break. Okay. We'll come back in just a moment. Pat Tamburino is my guest. He is now with LMI, the Director of Business Development there, after a long, distinguished career inside the Department of Defense. We'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Pat Tamburino. He's Director of Business Development at LMI. And they're very proud of you, Pat. They sent some material about telling me exactly how terrific you are. One of two people to win the Presidential Rank Award three times, now a finalist for the fourth time. They're even trying to give you awards after you leave. They must like you. I mean, somebody really likes you somewhere. And it's terrific to have you on the program today. We touched on two particular areas of the Pentagon workforce that I want to dig into with you a little bit more in this part of our conversation, and that's the cyber workforce and the acquisition workforce. And it seems to me that on the surface, you look at those two and you think, well, they're two totally separate things. Mm-hmm. But when I dig into them a little bit more and think about them, it strikes me that there are some similarities between the two. They're very specialized areas of expertise that you need. And the Defense Department needs them really, really bad in both areas. What does that mean for how one views the way that the department goes out and tries to identify people in those specialties and also tries to retain the talented people that you want to keep on staff?
So I think the bedrock strategy is the same for both. My reflection on both of those workforces is you want to get somebody early on. The acquisition workforce works on the Defense Acquisition Workforce Improvement Act, which I think is a really great idea that was introduced to the government. Three different levels of certifications in five or six career fields. I don't remember how, but you took somebody right out of school and you put them in the training program. And I think it won't be that different for cyber, and they have to come up with that same strategy, because you just need a bright person who's a reasonably critical thinker, and then you can teach them the rest of the skills. And I'm a big advocate of get your bedrock workforce by getting them right out of college, give them that fundamental training, and then give them lots and lots of on-the-job experience. I think for cyber, they're going to need a secondary strategy, because it's so technically complex and so diverse. The government's going to have to come up with a way of taking people mid-career from academia, industry, other walks of life, and taking them in as mid-career employees to take advantage of, I already have 10 or 12 experience in the cyber domain, and I bring a lot of experience to the table. We're going to have to come up with a very agile way of bringing that set of people into the workforce. And then for your executive cadre, it's who are the high potential people, who are the high performing people, and let's somehow get them out of the crowd and start grooming them to be the executive leadership. So it's going to be a combination of, I think, traditional college recruiting, mid-career insertion from outside the DOD, and then some grooming for the executives.
I want to go to the young folks that are just coming out of college and thinking about DOD as a career. Mm-hmm. The dynamic with them is dramatically different now than it was even 10 years ago. Right. A 22-year-old graduating from college expects to have 8 to 10 to maybe more than that places of work throughout his or her career.
Right.
and they probably will only spend 2 to 3 years at any one particular position, maybe within the same location. So what's the implication for that when, for example, an acquisition executive, experts tell me it takes 5 to 7 years to really grow somebody who's effective at doing an acquisition?
So I think you're right. I think this generation of children, young adults, I should say, I have two of them.
I was going to say.
I have two of them. They are excited. If I use both of my young adults as examples, they are excited to get that first opportunity. And I think what is overlooked is getting that first opportunity out of college. If you make them feel good about what they're doing, they are indebted to you. The ones that think about it clearly said, this is who gave me my first chance. So I take the view as, if I can capture them for 4 or 5 years, make them excited to work about the DOD, give them meaningful work, that's a good investment. And even if they go away, I'm reasonably certain I'll get them back later. I'll get them back at year 10 when they've had two other jobs, because I do believe they remember who gave them the first break. And I said in my retirement speech, I don't think there's any other organization in the world that will take a 22-year-old college graduate either into the military or into the civil service, train them, and give them the kind of responsibilities they'll get in that first 18 months. I know of no other place on the planet where that happens.
I see two potential ways that works to your benefit, because they get that experience and they're 26, 27, and they think the grass is greener, and they go out and see that, as you said, they don't have maybe nearly the access to responsibility or to seniority or to mission that they do inside. But even if they stay out for a while, they then turn into those mid-career executives that you're talking about bringing back at a higher level.
And the other thing we can leverage, it's a little bit emotional. Most of the kids that are 21 to 23 years old saw 9/11 as a high school student.
Mm-hmm.
The ones I've talked to at career fairs remember that as a seminal event, and they have a fair degree of altruism built into their psyche, which I think you can actually go leverage and say, okay, you can contribute to the national good as a civil servant. It's a fantastic way to do it.
There's an old saying in my business, when I first started in the 80s, it was widely known that even in the larger markets, you didn't make as much money if, say, you were going to apply at a station in Tampa or San Diego or something like that, and it was called being paid in sunshine. And the parallel to me seems to be, and I don't mean this to denigrate the experience at all, it seems like it's very valuable. Some of these folks are being paid in patriotism because they have a chance to serve their countries as they have an innate desire to do.
Let me push back on that.
Okay.
A little bit. I think federal salaries are extraordinarily competitive. I think hiring managers can give the young man or woman out of college, they can pay for their master's degree. Some of them can get part of their debt waived if they have student debt. And I think on a competitive basis, the benefits package is outstanding, and I think the salary is actually very competitive. I've really not heard a lot of people complain that it's not enough to make a go of it.
It's a fascinating conversation, yeah. Pat. I wish we had a ton more time. I would love to have you come back and continue this conversation. Congratulations on your new role at LMI. Pat Tamburino is Director of Business Development at LMI. My guest on Industry Chatter today, former Chief of Staff for the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. And you can read more about him and his new position. And you can hear my conversation with Pat at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.